the more you know, the more you can grow from that. So I do think it's important to look at the why behind your nourishment for your child.
Welcome back to the Freely Rooted podcast. We are sitting down and recording the season 3 premiere today, and we are so excited to be doing this again. My name is Corey, and my co-host Fallon and I started this podcast really upon realizing that nearly every single struggle that most mothers go through on a day-to-day basis, like low energy, irritability, easily drained, low libido, limited capacity, stressing about what to feed yourself or your kids, inability to be present with our kids, all of these normalized parts of motherhood that we really see perpetuated in our culture, Fallon and I realized this does not have to be our normal, especially when all of these symptoms can be explained in terms of metabolic health, meaning symptoms of a sluggish metabolism and running on stress hormones. It really expresses itself as these very symptoms, which is why thousands of you guys who have been listening since season 1 have been able to step into this calmer, stronger, more energized, more empowered, more peaceful, and more in-tuned versions of themselves when you have realized that simply your own metabolism is one of the driving roots of why you guys are struggling in your roles as moms. So our heart is to share this with moms, yes, but especially those who are also interested in learning more about God's design for our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm. And it really is such an honor to be back for season 3. And we are so humbled by how many of you are tuning in and seeing radical life change just from being a part of the podcast community. And our hope is that this resource provides really attainable information on how to pursue wellness in a sustainable way and helps take away both the guesswork of how to go about healing your metabolism and eliminates the stress of following so many rules and regulations like we find in a lot of wellness and diet culture spheres. And if you've been here, I'm sure you've heard, like Corey said, that we really want to pursue God's design for our bodies. And the two of us are convinced that means finding joy in your nourishment, having the freedom to eat enough food, as well as the freedom to not feel fear over real whole foods. And while we will, of course, never try to say that we can control every aspect of our health, we know that the world is broken and difficult and often outside of our control, but we also know that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. And because of that, we want to care for them and steward them in a gentle and loving way. And we want to teach that to our children and to their children and their children. So don't forget, outside of the podcast, Corey has an amazing online course that really breaks down the specifics of healing your metabolism in a sustainable way. If you feel like you need additional guidance, I would absolutely go get her course. And I also have calorie-specific meal plans on my site to help you with macro balancing, eating enough, prioritizing nourishing foods. And then since we have aired the last season, I've launched my pro-metabolic digital cookbook called Batch that has a lot of make-ahead, bulk prep style recipes that launched last month. So you can get both of those on my site. And as always, we'll link both Corey's resources and my resources in the show notes. We are so excited you guys are here with us again, and we hope you enjoy this episode with Noelle on metabolically supportive baby nourishment. Hi, Noelle. Welcome back to the podcast. We are so happy to have you back on. We can't tell you how many people just begged us to have you back on the show. Your episode that we did last time just did so, so well, and we love you so much, and we're so glad you're here. We would love to start off with just a life update from you. What's new? What's going on? How is motherhood and work? Tell us about how he's doing. Anything you want to share, we're just here for it.
Thank you so much for having me back on. It was awesome to listen to all your seasons so far. You guys have just like hit it out of the park. I've just loved following along on that journey. Oleg is great. It's crazy how time just keeps going. And he's so big. He's talking. I mean, he started walking at like 8 months, so that was a while ago, but I've just had like a run for my money in motherhood, which I think was just like coming for me, because when I was pregnant, I was just like really relaxed and just like, it's just fine, you know, like kids are kids. And I just feel like everyone was like, no, you're gonna have like a crazy kid. And Oleg is so much energy. He is like nonstop. And I mean, he loves to do everything. He's cooking now. He loves to cook. He has this like little stool he brings over to the stove and like climbs up, and he's like, he says like onions and meat and like hot dogs and wants to cook like all sorts of things. So that's really fun. But life is really good. We're just kind of busy, but also in sort of enjoying the winter time right now, which is like brought us more inwards and focus on like our future goals and family planning and where that's going to lead us and maybe some shifts in our business. We've added like a lot more supplements to our Forever Healthy line, and I think we might start shifting more into that as opposed to expanding on our skincare. Just because of the natural progression of what people have wanted from us. Not that they don't want our skincare, but it's just the supplements do really, really well. I don't know if you could hear.
Speaking of.
Oleg, he is lots of fun. He'll like, he's probably doing it right now. He'll like run up to the mirror and like scream at himself and then like run back.
Oh my gosh. Scream at
himself. Yeah, he is just so fun. Boys are the best. I just love having a boy. And I was a little nervous, you know, to have a boy. I was like, I mean, I didn't know what I was having, but to get a boy, I was like, oh no, I don't know if I can keep up with that. But no, it's good because I'm actually a little bit more rough around the edges than I thought I was.
Love that. It brings out that side in you. I love that you guys are transitioning to more supplements. I mean, I'm obsessed with y'all skincare.
Yeah.
And continue to buy that forever as long as you guys are producing it. But that's incredible that you guys are transitioning to more supplements as well.
Yeah. You know, for us, it's just like the demand on like Thyroid Plus and the demand on like our new product Oyster Plus and Progest Plus and our Pearl, like it's just, I mean, it sells out within minutes and we restock a large amount. So we just thought like, if we just, we kept it in stock full time, we'd have to pull back on our skincare because we make everything ourselves. You know, we don't manufacture anything. So it would be really hard for us to do that. Especially because with the skincare, we can't necessarily like hire somebody unless they have that experience with making it. Because although it's like you're following a recipe, there is a consistency to like the chemistry and, you know, how to actually do it. On when to combine things that it would just take a long time to teach someone. So yeah, I think that's the direction that we plan to move in. And we hope to maybe co-write a book together.
Oh my gosh.
We were going to work on a fertility and postpartum and pregnancy online course, but I decided I didn't want to do another course and that I think a book would be more fitting for like the energy output that like I would be have available for other people. Cause with a course, you still need to show up for people and like sort of coach them through it. But with a book, you know, someone buys it and it's really like their responsibility to like understand and evaluate that information and then apply it to themselves. And I think that would work better for us. So we plan to do that in 2022 sometime.
I love that. You guys are so intentional with every decision you make. It's something I really admire about you. And I know a lot of other people admire that about you, and especially even in this topic, how you've approached baby-led weaning, Oleg's first food. How did you start with collecting information about how to approach this? Or did you find that it was more just getting in tune with your gut instinct and just following your baby's leads?
I think prior to having Oleg, it was like all research-based and everything that like I've absorbed and all of my knowledge on physiology and like the human body, even as like an adult. And I did know a lot about kids' nutrition already. So going into it, I was like, okay, I have this information and this is what I'm going to do. But then, you know, Oleg and his energy and what he needs, like, you know, it throws a whole other element into it. And so I did have to really become more in tune with my intuition and his and help guide him in what he needed in that way. And so I guess I really combined like both of those things together to make my decisions on like when I was going to sort of start to wean and introduce foods. And I actually conducted like an experiment of my own where I would offer him foods like that I was eating starting at like 2 months. Like I would just like bring it to his mouth and see if he was interested because I just wanted to see like what his reaction to foods was, and absolutely no interest whatsoever. And the first food that he actually had was dark chocolate. And that was unintentional.
No way.
Yeah. We were actually in the car one day and I was eating like one of those Honey Mama's chocolate bars and he reached for it and then he put it in his mouth and he wanted to try it. And like, I tried to take it away from him and he was like screaming, crying. And so we just like let him eat some of it. And that was his first taste of food other than breast milk.
That's actually really cool. I think that's actually a really cool reflection of always getting in tune with what their needs are. I think that's really sweet.
Yeah. So that was when he was 4 months old. And the interesting thing about that was, you know, he had absolutely no interest in food and then suddenly had an interest. It was like overnight and it was his body and like what he needed. It was not based on a calendar of what I thought, you know, it's like, oh, you're 6 months old. Well, let me give you food now, you know? So, and then after that, like he would just have tastes of food. Like he wasn't eating like a ton of meals or anything like that, but he would taste what I was eating. And really he just wanted to taste things. And it wasn't until I'd say about like 6.5 months that he wanted to like have a plate of his own, you know, or eat more food. And I'm still breastfeeding now. So he still breastfeeds in the morning, in the afternoon, and then in the evening. And then whenever else he decides to. But those are regular times, you know, so he's still getting the breast milk, but he loves food and he's really interested in it. And his relationship to food is really healthy. Like he'll walk into the kitchen and just see what we have and just express what he wants. And that's just a really awesome thing to witness because, and also, you know, we only stock our fridge with things that we would consume. So there's nothing in there that he would be like, I want that. And yeah, I'd be like, no, you can't eat that sort of thing. So I think that's really important too, when you're raising kids to, you know, provide them with what you want them to eat.
Mm-hmm. Was his interest in food sort of the main form of communication you looked for to decide if he's ready? And then you kind of touched on this, but I want you to give a full answer on like the current advice for first foods, you know, like, do they have teeth? Are they sitting up, et cetera? What are your thoughts on those, or sort of that advice? And then what did you look for in Oleg to know he was ready?
So I don't think that teeth is necessarily the number one thing to look for because baby's gums are extremely strong and powerful and they don't need all of their teeth to have foods. But, you know, when you're starting with something like steak, you know, you'd want your child to have teeth. So, you know, you just have to gauge like what foods they would be ready for. But I do think it's important that the baby is able to sit up, maybe not necessarily by themselves, but in a chair, you know, of some sort, like a baby chair where they could, you know, sit their back up just for safety reasons of like not choking. But, you know, I think that the child will really tell you in their expressions of when they are ready to consume food. And that's really what I did with Oleg is I looked for him, his interest in it and grabbing for it and wanting to taste it. And in terms of first foods, I focused on foods that I wanted him to get acclimated to the taste of. So that would be normal throughout his whole life. You know, it's like when I eat liver, I'm still kind of like, you know, but like Oleg will sit there and eat like 4 ounces of liver pate and be like,
oh my God, amazing.
You know, it's just like the funniest thing ever. I'm like, good for you, man. I need some toast.
I know. So the first food was dark chocolate for him. And then, like you said, it's like the foods that you knew would be important for his, to support his physiology as he grew. So are there any like particular first foods you would recommend to start with for that reason?
Yes, definitely raw egg yolks and liver of some sort. I did liver pate, bone broth mixed with the liver pate. So I did a mixture of like the normal baby led weaning, but then also parent feeding. So I did a combination of the two because what's the more conventional baby led weaning is like rice cakes and celery sticks and like things that they can pick up that has absolutely no nutrition in it. And that's not really beneficial to the child. Like, okay, so they're building their skills, you know, their motor skills, but like they're not getting nutrients. So I really focused on foods that, you know, like oranges, for example, like he could pick that up and eat it himself. Different types of fruits that he could pick up and eat himself. And then more of the like nutrient dense things, like the liver pate and like egg yolk with raw cream, raw butter, bone broth, gelatin, things like that. They would be more purees and I'd feed them to him. And now he can use a spoon and a fork himself. So he just eats himself. But yeah, that's what I would really start with is liver, egg yolk, bone broth, raw dairy. I also gave him smoked oysters a couple times a week, which now he will eat like a can to himself. So
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I would have loved to grown up on food like that. When I think about like, man, I'd be a really awesome, healthy, crazy, cool person if I did that. Like no problems.
You know, what's funny is whenever Koa, I mean, we talk about this, Fallon and I talk about this a lot of like kind of coming away from dogmatic approaches. And something I used to be super dogmatic about was actually baby led weaning. And whenever I was feeding my first child, I would actually look at what you just said, which is like the appropriate foods are the ones that they can hold with their hands, as opposed to even looking at nutritional density. But I used to be so dogmatic about it only being like solids, which is so interesting. And I'm definitely moving away from that now and doing a combo. But it's just nice to be able to, you know, change as you go and as you learn more. And I love everything you just said.
Yeah. I still offer on a, like on his tray, different types of foods to see what he'll eat. And every day he chooses like a combination of whatever it is that he wants, you know, like sometimes like he's just in the mood for eating like more fruit. And sometimes like he wants more meat on his plate or, you know, and I think it's important to offer that variety. Even when they're young and you're spoon feeding them, like you can have different bowls of things, and see what they want the most. And that's still to me like baby led, you know, I'm still like letting him lead the way in what he wants to nourish his body with and what he, you know, feels like his body needs more of. But yeah, I definitely wanted like a very well-rounded approach to it. And the purees worked really well to get those really nutrient dense foods in, especially in the beginning. And then now like he'll take a piece of bacon and like eat it, and then steak, just like chew it. And so, you know, he's still like using his fingers and things like that. But it worked really well for us because now I feel that he has, not only like the motor skills to like eat himself, like he doesn't even use like a baby fork. He uses like our forks and he'll like take, you know, his fork and just pick off the plate, like what he wants. And yeah, he just enjoys food so much. Like he always is like,
love that.
It's just like such a joy to watch.
I thought of a funny story the other day about the difference between how I fed my first baby and how I'm now feeding my third, who's a toddler. He's not really a baby anymore, but I remember a conversation I had with my mother-in-law. So my oldest first foods were what I was super convinced was healthy and like the right approach. And so we did a lot of like canned veggies and I don't even know what else, guys. Just like, it wasn't the worst of the worst, but in hindsight I'm like, but I remember saying, I had like seen somebody post on, you know, social media somewhere that they were giving their baby like some sort of like fish. I don't remember what it was. It was like fish and like quinoa. And I remember being like, why are you being so extra? Like, why are you trying so hard with your baby? like normal healthy things. And it's so funny, like looking at that version of myself where I was like, have some canned veggies and like, here's some canned corn and some canned peas. And then with our third, we did do this approach of like bone broth and raw egg yolks and like raw dairy and liver. Like those were some of his first foods. And the kid, like you said about Oleg, like he'll down a whole can of oysters by himself, no problem. And it's just wild to me looking at the difference between my first and my youngest. My youngest had those foundations set from the beginning. And so he will grow up enjoying those foods. Whereas my oldest struggles a little bit more to eat those things. And so I think, I think there's something encouraging about knowing that like, if you give those foods to your kids out of the gate, they are going to develop a taste for them and they are going to grow up enjoying them. That doesn't mean that our older kids, like so many of us have, are just, you know, like lost forever and they'll never enjoy like liver and oysters. It might be a little bit more difficult, but like I didn't grow up on oysters and I can eat them now. Liver, I'm with you, Noelle. I still am like, give me the raw liver shot. I cook liver, you guys, I kid you not, a couple times a month. And every time I'm like, why did I do this? I'm just going to do the raw liver shot, actually. Anyway, I think it's encouraging. Like we can teach our kids to have a palate for these foods. We can teach them from day one and they will enjoy them. And again, it doesn't mean that it's a lost cause if we don't start from day one, but for those of us who are still having young babies, like we can set those foundations early. And I think that's just so incredible.
Yes, well, I agree.
And the other thing I want to echo, we talked about this on our Simplifying Kids Nutrition episode, but I just want to say it again here, is when you're feeding your child what is already a normal part of your diet, there's no extra stress. There's not this stress of like, let me go, you know, make this completely separate meal and snack for my baby and make it perfect. If you're just going about your day and like, here you go, here's a little bit of this.
Yes.
It's just so much more simple that way. And I've even had moms reach out to me and say like, when do you have time to make food for yourself? Cause I feel like I'm just making food for my kids all the time and I don't have time to eat. And I'm like, just make the food together. Like that's really, it's really the best way to approach it, is like, if you see it as I'm just feeding myself and my family, and we're all eating together and they're all eating a part of what I eat, it makes it so much more simple. So basically I want to go back to first foods. You basically took like an animal based approach in those first few months. And then when did fruit and maybe root vegetables, when did you start incorporating those into Oleg's diet?
I would say like after the first month of giving him those foods, I started to do like more cooked fruits, like apples and stone fruits, and then I'd puree them for him. he really liked oranges. Like he really just wanted to eat the oranges, so I'd give him the oranges and stuff. But the reason why I just did the more cooked fruit is because it was just going to be easier on digestion, and I wanted him to get like a taste for it, but he loved it right away. And then I started to incorporate raw honey, which is a little bit more controversial to
please talk about that.
People. Yeah. You know, through my research and my understanding of the dangers in raw honey is, you know, from botulism in the honey, which is an extremely rare occurrence when you're buying high quality raw honey. And most of the studies and the cases in which people got botulism from eating something is from corn syrup. And so that's what I discovered. And I was like, you know, I feel comfortable giving him raw honey and he likes it and he wants it. And, you know, I would give him a taste off my finger. And then I started mixing it into custards and into the fruit purees and things like that, and giving him a piece of cheese with it on it. And he had no issues. So, you know, I just felt really confident doing it. I've never had an issue with honey. I just don't believe in like the fear around it. You know, obviously people would be like, don't give your kids raw egg yolks. Or I gave my child raw egg yolks and he had diarrhea. But you know, when you eat raw eggs, they actually really help to cleanse the intestines of bad, harmful bacteria. So sometimes if you've never had that before and then you add that in, you can have that reaction one or two times. It's not forever. You know, so I just took like a very, you know, different approach to all of that. I salt his food as well. I think it's really important that kids do get minerals in. I've done a bunch of research on the why people are, you know, not including salt. And to me, it just is like counterintuitive to development in general. Mm-hmm. And I still don't understand like, you know, the quote unquote science behind it. He does very well with salt. I give him, you know, even magnesium. So, you know, he gets all of those minerals. And I think it's important to give your kids what you're getting. I mean, they're basically just little versions of you, you know. Obviously their digestive system is a little bit underdeveloped at a younger age, but you know, as they get older, like through the months and stuff, and as you're introducing foods, there's no reason why you can't start to experiment with things like raw honey and salt.
So speaking of foods and like popular beliefs surrounding foods. Can we talk about grains for a second? Because I've heard, okay, don't introduce grains until the molars appear. I think it's either until molars appear or until age one is what I've heard.
I don't think that I gave Oleg many grains before one, but it was mostly because I was focusing on getting in those nutrient dense foods that are going to give him more nutrients, you know, that are less void of those nutrients, because he wasn't eating like full meals. You know, he's not like sitting down and eating a full meal like I am. He was still breastfeeding, getting the, you know, dominant amount of calories and nutrients from that. So anything that I gave him was very purposeful to introduce it into his diet, into his palate, and get those extra nutrients in. And grains are, you know, void of a lot, but they're not bad. You know, properly prepared grains can be really beneficial in the diet and a really good source of carbohydrates, especially if you tolerate them well. But I do think it's important to gauge, like, you know, what it is that, like, the overall diet of your child, like what it is that you're feeding them, and making sure that you're not just like giving them sourdough at every meal, or giving them, you know, rice and then just a small amount of protein. Like, you know, really look at the overall meal plate and decide, like, okay, is there really substance in here, or is this just like a filler?
Speaking of, I would love for us to touch on baby cereal being added, or like rice cereal being added to bottles. I feel like we can't have this conversation without addressing this.
I just think it's an absolute no-no.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no nutrients in it. And if anything, I mean, it's just full of iron, mm-hmm. added iron, added, you know, synthetic vitamins, and it's not good. And, you know, when you have a lack of those nutrients and those excess carbohydrates that are from starch, it's going to deplete your mineral stores more. And that's the case for babies. It's the case for adults too. So it is really important to, like, you know, think about the food, and there's a purpose for it. You know, there should be a purpose for it. It's not just to give your child something. Mm-hmm. It's to complete something in the body. And so if I think parents start to look at that, they would maybe question, like, do I really need to be adding this cereal into this bottle, or making them rice cereal? Like, is rice cereal, what is rice cereal? You know, like, what is it here that I am giving my child? You know, and I think they probably change their mind about that if you approach it from that perspective, as opposed to, it's just like the next thing to do, you know? Cause I think that's really what it is. It's like, parents are just like, well, that's just what you do, is that you do that. You right. give them rice cereal,
right.
You know, which, you know, it's fine to make those mistakes and to do that. It's not the end of the world. You know, your children have their entire lives to eat food. But if you, then the more, you know, the more you can grow from that. So I do think it's important to look at the why behind your nourishment for your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think just to piggyback off what you said, I think there's so much freedom in realizing that you can sort of shift and change your approach to nourishment with your kids over the years. And I feel like our story and our family has been a prime example of that. Like my oldest, and even my middle to an extent, they don't eat the same way now as we did, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. We've radically changed our approach to nutrition. And so I think, you know, if you're listening and you're like, oh, I definitely put rice cereal in my baby's bottle. Like, yeah. Noelle said, you don't have to freak out. Like in the future, maybe let's reevaluate. But I think, you know, one thing we stand behind here is just that there's a lot of freedom to just course correct when you find that that is something that needs to happen. And I think a lot of us feel a lot of weight over nourishment decisions for our kids, and that can be tricky. And so that's why we're super glad to have this conversation today, because I feel like it lays a really, really functional, tangible outline of how to approach food with your kids. So on that note, tell us, how did you decide the frequency of feeding certain foods to Oleg? So like, does he have, you know, liver X amount of times a week, or like certain things daily? Can you talk about that some?
Yeah. So egg yolks and dairy are things that I get into his diet every single day. I get fruit into his diet, usually some sort of bone broth if it's mixed with, I mean, I usually will like mix it with some sort of meat or like cook the meat or cook a potato in there and then give that to him just so he's getting that in. But he also eats, you know, marshmallows and gelatin gummies. So he's getting that through those foods. And then I make sure that he's getting fruit, but he will usually ask for juice or oranges, or he'll just say juice. And so he wants a little bit of those things. So I give that to him every single day. And then in terms of like liver and oysters, I usually give it to him a couple times a week, maybe two times a week. And it coincides with when I'm eating it, you know, just like, what Corey was mentioning before, it's like, you just make your meals and then feed your whole family. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do every single time I make something, whether I'm making a snack, you know, and that's how I get in enough calories throughout the day while being like a busy mom. You know, if I'm making my pre-breakfast, like egg yolk drink, I give some to Oleg, like he needs it too. He needs to eat food 30 minutes within waking up as well. Even if he nurses, I still give him something. So I split that with him. Like when I make a milk drink with collagen or add like orange juice to it or whatever, he'll drink that as well. And so I think it's really easy to start to give your kids these foods once you start to give it to yourself. And like the holdup is like parents not wanting to take the plunge themselves, you know? But I think once you do it, it becomes very simple to, you know, nourish your family in that time frame at the same time as you. So I just use that gauge for him as well. Like when I'm giving myself liver, I give it to him. I eat liver 2 to 3 times a week, and it's not a lot. It's usually around 2 ounces. And with him, although I usually give him like an ounce, he'll want to eat more. So he'll eat like 1 to 4 ounces in a sitting. And if he does that, then I'll maybe give him less the next time during the week, just to make sure I balance it out. And the same thing with oysters. Like he'll sit there and like eat a whole can of smoked oysters. Although I don't really limit that for him as much, just a little bit because of the omega-3s and the PUFAs. Like I just don't want him to eat that every single day, but I'm glad that he eats a whole can of oysters.
Totally. I think that's amazing that he does that. I wanted to add one more note when you were talking about the apprehension and not really knowing what to feed your child or having fear surrounding that. And I totally agree that it's like, once that is a normal part of your diet, because there's so much food fear, especially with the raw stuff. We totally project that fear onto our children. I love all of that so much. So I'm very curious if you give Oleg any of the supplements that you guys create at your house, or any supplements. And if you do, what age did you start them?
I do. I give Oleg, he takes the Master Mineral drink, the magnesium, potassium, and sodium bicarbonate, and he gets that every day. He'll usually do, it's like I'll pour like an ounce in a cup with juice, and then he'll take a couple of sips of that, and then I'll just drink the rest of it. So he's getting like a couple tablespoons of it, but sometimes he'll have that twice a day. He loves Shilajit. It is the weirdest thing. This like is so, I mean, I hate the way Shilajit tastes, and I've been taking Shilajit for like 15 years, and every time I take it, I'm just like, you know, it's just still like hard to get down. But he'll, with the tablets, he'll chew them. Like he'll take them and he'll chew them and he'll be like, and he'll take a couple of them. I have to stop him from taking too much. So he usually gets 1 to 2 of those every day. Or he'll take the resin and it'll be like a pea size amount and he'll take that Shilajit. We give him, vitamin K2. The Lifeblood brand of vitamin K2 and vitamin E. Those two things, I don't give it to him every single day. I'll give it to him maybe like 3 or 4 times a week, and I usually give that to him together. And then I will do occasionally, depending on like his teeth situation, I'll like dip my finger in a little bit of the pure USP grade aspirin and put it in his mouth. And that's really, really helpful for just inflammation and thyroid production. So it's not something I, you know, give him a lot of, but it is a very small amount. And that's something I do take myself to help with just like lowering prostaglandins and supporting progesterone and thyroid. And I think that's all that he really gets like supplementally. Like he'll have collagen and he'll have gelatin. He'll have pearl powder like mixed in with something. But other than those things, I think it's pretty simple. I really do focus on the minerals a lot though, especially as a growing kid with such a high rate of metabolism. And if he wasn't eating liver, it's something I would supplement with. For sure. And if he wasn't eating oysters, I would supplement with it. So I would take, you know, a desiccated liver capsule or a scoop of something and put it into his food or the oyster and put that into his food as well. So I think that those could be supplements, but they're also like food-based supplements that, that we incorporate. But yeah, so it's pretty simple. Oh, and I'll do like magnesium, topical like cream at night sometimes. If he's fussy, like to go to sleep.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it again sounds like, I mean, you're taking the foundations that you use for yourself and applying them to your children, which is the goal, right? I feel like that's what we say over and over, is that like your kids' nutrition doesn't really need to look that different from yours. And I think that's just really important and freeing to not have like this separate list of rules for you and for your kids. So I love that. So one of the questions we got a lot of is just the topic of gut health and, you know, when you introduce a new food, experiencing, eczema, you know, allergies, constipation. Obviously this is a really like wide range of topics here, but you know, I just know so many moms, myself included, when my son was younger, who just have had a host of responses or reactions to food. So let's talk about that. I'm trying to decide, like, what's the actual question here? what's the question, Fallon? But like, how can we sort of troubleshoot if our child does have a response like that to a certain food? Where would you start with, you know, either eczema, allergies, constipation, if you want to divide those up and answer separately, that's also great. I know these, again, this is like a really wide range of conversation here, but let's kind of do what we can.
Yeah. So, you know, oftentimes, with allergies like eczema or an allergic reaction, you have to kind of go back to, you know, when your child was in the womb and what you were doing in the womb as well. What you were doing while they were in the womb. and, you know, ask yourself, like, were you vaccinated? Did you take antibiotics? Was your child vaccinated? Did they take antibiotics? Those all are contributing factors to a heavy metal load, an autoimmune issue, you know, inflammatory bowels. That's actually the main cause of the eczema and the allergic response is inflammation in the gut. And most of the time it's chronic. So a lot of children who have like allergic reactions to like every food, it really does come back to those vaccinations and those antibiotics if they were ever given it. I've super rarely ever heard of somebody who completely avoided all of that and their child had severe allergic reactions. There are things like constipation or diarrhea, but if you think about it, it's like if your child is being exposed to something completely new for the first time, there might be a reaction to that. Just like if you were exposed to something new for the first time, it doesn't mean that your child is allergic to that food, but it does mean that your child has never had that food before. You know, an allergic response will happen if you have too much of something or if you don't have enough of something either. So it is important to at least get, you know, foods into their system and gauge, okay, is this a chronic allergy or is this like a one-time thing? You know, you can't just jump on it saying like, oh, they're allergic because like they got constipated when they had dairy one time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to ask yourself those questions and just be like really honest about it. And then you can go from there to proceed on how to deal with that allergy or with that symptom.
And I love what you said about looking at your own health history as well, because yeah, there could be the mom who avoided all of those and then baby has eczema and they're like, what in the world did this come from? But if they look at their own health history, were they vaccinated as a child or even as an adult, or had antibiotics or maybe a UTI or something, like any heavy dose of antibiotics, even when you're not pregnant, because that baby is inheriting the microbiome from your own health. So babies are, it's like a mirror, honestly. Sometimes they can show you the most underlying thing that's happening in your own body that you don't even realize until that fresh new human comes out. And it's like, here I am, here's an imbalance that might be still happening in your body.
Yeah. Another thing to like, to piggyback on what you're mentioning, and I know that you are going through this with your root canal extraction, but dental work as well, that's really, really important. Do you have any amalgam fillings in while you were pregnant? Did you have a root canal while you were pregnant that was still in? All these things affect the growth and, you know, the development of our children. And it's like serious mom guilt when you do something like that, but it's just, it's okay. You know, like we just have to learn from what was done to us. There's things that are in our control and then there's things that are not in our control. You know, it's like if you were a child and you were vaccinated, or you were vaccinated and you were underage, then you had a reaction to it and you're still dealing with those symptoms, but you get pregnant and then your child has some sort of reaction to it. Because of that, you know, it's just what you have to deal with, the consequences of the generational trauma, essentially, and work with what you have. You know, I think it's important to not get stuck in that guilt and that sadness of like, oh no, I messed up, or oh no, like I shouldn't have done that, because there, you can't go back in time. You can only move forward. And so you just have to learn more. And it's usually not the end of the world. You know, the body is an incredible healing machine. You know, it can go through so much trauma, so much, and just come out like totally fine. So, you know, I think that being persistent and pushing through those really difficult phases and those difficult times is super important.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. And I love that. I love that you talked about just continuing to learn and not experiencing or not carrying the guilt. Don't carry the guilt. Just, you know, we know better, we do better. We learn and we change as we go. Actually, Fallon, I would love to circle back and talk about your experience with eczema, because your son obviously went through an intense eczema period. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts to share from your experience on like how you healed that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been a conversation I've wanted to have really in depth lately, because, you know, I've sort of spoken outwardly, even on your blog, Corey, that's kind of how we got connected, was sort of my story of telling about my son and me with my Hashimoto's and sort of how we addressed that. But the sort of short backstory is that my middle son was vaccine injured at 2 months, and then his body just really spiraled into dysfunction, full body eczema, allergies that developed virtually overnight. And by the way, if you are a mom listening, one of the first ways we discovered a full blown allergy was blood in the stool. So if you do see that, that's probably a full blown allergy. It's not just like a, you know, a food reaction. And that's something that you might need to get testing on. But that's sort of how it started. His body was just like covered in full blown eczema for months and months and months of his life. And it's actually how I started diving into healing through food, was because of him, and because we were just so desperate to get answers, and, you know, nothing that we were trying was working. Where it gets tricky is that, you know, he doesn't have eczema at this point in his life, which is a huge blessing. I'm so thankful for that. The way that we addressed it when he had it so badly was, yes, through food. You know, we eliminated all toxins. We became a completely toxin-free home. And again, at first I had this idea that that was just like scent-free, and that's not always the case. So like Dreft, for example, is like not cutting it in terms of toxicity. You know, it, like fully non-toxic items are not just like the baby friendly items that you see in the store. It's kind of a separate deep dive, which is also something I didn't know when I first started parenting. It just was like, everything's scent free and then that's fine. Sometimes it's more than that. So that was kind of our first step into healing. And what we ended up doing was kind of a really, really diluted longer term steroid and antibiotic. I wouldn't have chosen that route today. And so it's tricky because people are always like, how did you heal your son's eczema? And I'm like, well, I don't know that I'm going to tell you to go do the same thing. I mean, I think the Lord did use it in our journey to bring him relief in that season, but he still does deal with allergies. And sometimes it shows up on his skin. And so we know there's still some dysfunction. So basically, the way that we're approaching it now, and the way that I wish I would have approached it, you know, when my baby was 2 months old and had really severe eczema, I wish that I would have started becoming aware of, like Noelle talked about, minerals and mineral status. I wish that I would have been aware of copper and its role in your histamine response. I wish I would have been aware of at least just macronutrients at a basic, or macro minerals rather, at a basic level. So, you know, sodium, potassium, magnesium, like none of these things were even on our radar when my son was younger. So now we're really trying to prioritize those minerals, copper through things like beef liver and bee pollen, you know, fresh tropical fruits. And then, you know, like Noelle talks so much about vitamin A. Vitamin A is a really big factor in your skin health. And so, you know, we try to really prioritize things like beef liver. My son has a dairy allergy still, so that's a bit tough, but dairy is a, you know, can be a fantastic source. And so these are the things that we're trying to focus on now, is like nervous system care and, you know, minerals and, you know, like still toxin exposure and like EMF exposure and stress overload. And so I wish I would have known that when my first child, or second child rather, developed eczema. I feel like it was just, most moms are like, where do I even start with, when my baby has eczema? You know, our knee jerk response is either, okay, well, I'm just going to cut out the food that he had, or we turn to some sort of conventional topical approach, neither of which are really working. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. Obviously we're still trying to heal a lot of allergies, and I have a lot of hope for that. And I'm also curious if you guys have any other thoughts on how, or like Noelle, if Oleg suddenly developed eczema, which I really doubt would happen with the foundation that you've set, but like, how would you encourage a mom with a young child who is, you know, under one developing eczema, and they just feel like they've either got to, you know, stop nursing because their baby's reacting to that, or they have to like use steroids, or, you know, all the typical advice we're given. Like, what would you do if you were faced with that scenario? How would you support Oleg in that?
You know, one of the common questions that I do get all the time is about nursing and eczema, like an exclusively breastfed baby getting eczema. And through my research, and one of the things that has helped just countless women, like in my community, is USP grade aspirin, because it instantly lowers prostaglandins in the milk. And that is usually what is irritating the baby's gut and causing the inflammatory response and the eczema. So that's something that I think is a really great tool. I know a lot of people are like purist naturalists and they don't want to try it. I would try it, especially if you know your child is suffering, and without cutting foods out, because that often will happen with dairy. And then, you know, then they'll try the aspirin and the dairy is fine. So it's a way to keep dairy in your diet as well. But if it was, you know, I would probably be taking a very similar approach to Fallon. as, you know, detoxing, you know, your home and your lifestyle, and really addressing things from an EMF point and, you know, heavy metals, and focusing.
Just right into the mic. He's ready.
Yeah. Focusing on diet and minerals, and supporting, you know, the organs to detoxify naturally as well. You know, because I was harmed by the HPV vaccine, and I had an insane severe reaction to that. So I worked for years detoxing from that. It's definitely in the back of my mind, like, oh no, Larry, is that something that will affect my children later on, you know? So far, so good. Everything's fine. But I did a lot of, that's where I started implementing Shilajit on a regular basis. Shilajit, and really increasing my mineral intake, and, you know, switching my diet over from like being vegan plant-based to just like nutrient dense, and supporting my hormone production and my liver with eating adequate protein. So I think all of that is Sorry.
I wish you guys could see Noelle right now holding her head up in the air to try to get Oleg away from it. I love it.
Yeah, he's like laughing at me.
I think, can I add one note about Sheila G? Because this might be a brand new supplement. If you're listening, you've haven't listened to the podcast before maybe, or aren't familiar with our platforms, this is such a great alternative to what is actually pretty popular right now, which is TRS and like natural zeolite. Did you say zeolite or zeolite?
Zeolite.
This is something to look into for sure. And I hope that this is not going to cause a ruckus, but these natural, what did you guys say?
Zeolite.
It's something to keep in mind as far as how it depletes the body of minerals. And so what Sheila G is able to do is provide the body with minerals as opposed to stripping the body with minerals while serving the same purpose. So it's a really great alternative to that. If you sell TRS, like I said, I'm not trying to stir the pot or anything, but it's just something to be keeping in mind if you are going to use that in your family's health as far as a heavy metal detoxer.
I'm actually really glad you brought this up, Corey, because I get asked about, or I get suggestions of TRS quite frequently. And we did have a bit of a journey with TRS. And in hindsight, I wish that I like she legit said. So I'm glad you decided to just reference that, honestly, because I think a lot of moms, I mean, it's so difficult when you have a child who has, you know, eczema or allergies or something like that. And I know the feeling that you're just desperate for some kind of an answer and you're willing to do just about anything. And we also live kind of in a culture where moms are super ready and willing to volunteer any sort of suggestions they think could be helpful. And that's usually rooted in, again, wanting to be helpful. But it's really difficult to wade through just the information and, you know, decide on how to approach these things. Honestly, it's really tough. I was going to say one more thing that I forgot to throw in with our current approach is that we are working with a fantastic homeopath right now as well to help some of that vaccine detox and help support my son's body. So that's another thing to kind of pocket if you're a mom kind of struggling with allergies and eczema right now. Homeopathy can really be a super supportive way to approach that, as well as all of these other things. So I think it's just super multifaceted. And that's the hard thing about it, is that it's not usually like, okay, start using this one topical thing, or just start taking this one spray, and then like you're gonna be golden. It takes a lot of work and effort. And if you are a mom listening who is going through this, just please know that my heart goes out to you. It's a really tough season, and I just pray that you'll find some encouragement and hope from what we talked about today.
That's fantastic. I love that. And the last question is the big topic of, I still get questions every day about this, actually, the vitamin A toxicity belief that especially even pregnant women, they're told like, don't eat liver because you risk vitamin A becoming toxic in your body. So maybe you want to approach it with a full view of that, or maybe just relating to children, but go ahead.
For the most part, people are vitamin A deficient. So to get to a place of toxicity, you'd really have to be eating a ton of it. And most cases, vitamin A toxicity happens with carotene and not retinol. So keeping that in mind, you know, consume vitamin A from liver, not from, you know, over like carrots and sweet potatoes and things like that. And you should be fine. I do think that you can have too much vitamin A. It's not completely impossible. You don't want to eat 4 ounces of liver every single day. You don't want to give your kid 4 ounces of liver every single day. But taking liver capsules, it's a very small amount of vitamin A in it. So you could take something like that daily. But if you were going to eat liver raw or cooked, I would consume it a few times a week as opposed to every single day. So that's just the way to avoid, you know, you just don't want to have too much of anything in any case, you know, but most people are extremely depleted of vitamin A, unless you grew up on like a traditional diet and those foods were a part of your diet, which then you probably know how to consume them.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll link a post from Innate Functional Nutrition that specifies on the pregnancy thing as well, if anyone's interested in diving into it. But that pretty much wraps up the episode there. Noelle, thank you so much for being on. This was such a fantastic conversation, and especially you addressing the eczema and possibly taking USP aspirin. I haven't even heard that connection. It's just such great advice. Do you have a blog post on aspirin, or should I link a different post there?
I don't think that I do. I've been meaning to write a post on aspirin. I have it like scattered throughout on my page, but I think, you know, I'll do that, and then maybe I'll get it up before this episode goes out. Sure we'll and I can send it to you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll have follow-up questions on it, so maybe I'll send people to that, or I'll find a different resource for you guys if it's not out before then, but be on the lookout on Noelle's page for when she eventually talks about it. So thank you for being with us for our season 3 premiere, and we will see you guys on the next episode.
Yeah, thank you.